In 2014, same-sex marriage was declared legal in Nevada and throughout the land. In November, voters will be asked in Nevada to officially change the state constitution, whose wording still prohibits same-sex marriage. It's a formality, and it's expected to pass, but that is in stark contrast to the majorities who voted for the ban on same-sex marriage in 2000 and 2002, and it raises some questions. 6 years later, has legalized marriage between same-sex couples improved their lives? Do they feel a greater sense of equality now? Or is there a lot more work to do? And is Nevada, as USA Today just revealed, the best state in the country for LGBT people to live? What do you think? If you are a part of the LGBT community, do you feel your quality of life has improved here? Are things a lot better than they were 10 or 20 years ago? Or do you still feel the threat of discrimination or worse? Our number is 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. You're a big part of this conversation, and you can also email us at son@knpr.org. On social media, we are at KNPR News on Twitter, and Facebook, we are Nevada Public Radio. Dennis McBride is a historian who documented the state's LGBT history in his book, Out of the Neon Closet, Queer Community in the Silver State. Dennis McBride, welcome back to the program.
All right, thank you. Glad to be here.
Sure. So, Dennis, when the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals struck down the state's constitutional ban in 2014 and same-sex marriages began in earnest, what did that moment feel like to you?
Well, it's something that we'd actually been fighting towards since at least 1995, and we were really derailed in 2000 and 2002 by Question 2, which was the constitutional amendment, anti-same-sex marriage constitutional amendment. And so to find that it happened like that, it seemed to happen all at once. It was a tremendous relief. Nevada, thanks to David Parks, already had an Employment Non-Discrimination Act so we could work without being discriminated against because of our orientation or identification. Our sodomy law was repealed in 1993, so really the right to marry and to enjoy all of the accrued privileges, rights, and responsibilities that straight people enjoyed seemed like the very last step forward that we needed to take before we were pretty much equal. So it was a huge relief, a breath of relief and fresh air.
You know, when you're talking legislative changes, it also seems like a huge change. As you said, it was 2000 and 2002 when this state voted against any kind of same-sex marriage. I was at the Democratic National Party, was on the Strip at a casino, and Democrats there cheered when same-sex marriage was banned. And just 12 years later, that is a fast shift when it comes to politics. I mean, did you feel that way? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I can't think of any historical precedent that that public opinion, in the broadest sense, changed that far that fast.
Do you have any idea why?
Well, I don't really have an idea why. I think part of it could be that we became far more visible. We came out in much larger numbers and in more public venues than we had before. Hollywood, television, gay characters, queer characters were showing up everywhere. And I think that the more we came out, the more people became comfortable with us. And I think that that was probably the most important reason. Otherwise, it's just really such a surprise, a shock.
Yeah. I also wonder if Well, you know, money had something to do with it, because 6 or 7 years ago, there was a lot of talk here about how Nevada was too slow to change and should have moved quicker. The idea was that the LGBT community had money and would choose other cities to vacation in that were more accepting than Las Vegas. I wonder, Dennis, if you think the city wasn't so interested in making money from those tourists, if you think it would have taken a lot longer.
I think that if they had realized that the disposable income available in the queer community was generally higher than in the straight community, they may have started catering to them sooner. The tourist industry in Nevada started catering to the gay community probably around 2005, 2006. It was in that period when the strip hotels, who never wanted anything gay in their premises before, started hosting pool parties and pride celebrations and becoming convention venues for gay organizations. And I think they realized that, yeah, they're missing out on all this cash. But I don't think that that's a particularly large part of what happened, because most people who began to accept us later in the 2000s, that first decade of the new century, really didn't have anything to do with the industries that were looking for our money.
You know, it's interesting. In June of this year, U.S. News and World Report named Nevada the top destination for LGBT people. And I wonder, you know, you talked about the promotions that the resorts and the casinos mm-hmm. did on behalf of the gay tourist. I wonder if those promotions have helped Las Vegas to become more gay-friendly.
Oh, I think absolutely. Sure it has. I mean, I was born and raised here and grew up in the 1950s and 60s and 70s. And I remember how repressed, how dangerous. You could be thrown in jail and fined heavily just for being gay. And now here I am, 65 years old, and legally absolutely equal to everybody else. I have access to every kind of law that everyone else has. And to me, that's a breathtaking change. And yeah, I think that it's the visibility and the catering too that has made the difference in Nevada, in Las Vegas in particular.
I'm talking to Dennis McBride. He's a lifelong Nevadan and the former director of the Nevada State Museum. In 2017, he wrote a book that chronicled the history of queer life in Nevada dating back to statehood in the 1860s. This November, Nevadans will have a chance to formalize what's already the law, erasing an 18-year-old constitutional amendment that banned same-sex marriage in Nevada. The vote is really a formality, but it brings up some questions. Has the legalization of same-sex marriage in Nevada led to better lives or better community or economic standing for those in the LGBT community? And how is life for those in the LGBT community in Nevada these days? We want your opinions. Give us a call. Our number is 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. You can also email SON at knpr.org. And on Twitter, we are at KNPR News. And Dennis McBride, you know, in your book, you say it took more than 100 years for LGBT communities in Nevada to overcome institutional homophobia. And you've said the Nevada Employment Non-Discrimination Bill of almost 30 years ago had a really big impact. How so?
I think that that's the most important thing, employment non-discrimination. I mean, the Supreme Court just made that the law of the land, in June, in their decision. But if you're talking about having a safe life, if you're not allowed to earn a living or safely pursue what you want to do for a living, you can be fired at any minute for being queer. I think that's, in my opinion, far worse than being thrown in jail for sodomy.
Yeah, you made some really interesting points as well in your book. You've said there were overtly and quietly anti-gay governors and legislators since the 1860s. But in the last 10 years, we've had an openly gay lawmaker, several LGBT lawmakers.
Yes.
Former Republican Governor Brian Sandoval signed LGBT legislation. He appointed trans people to state organizations. Would you consider state government here to be more tolerant and supportive of LGBT than, I don't know, other state governments in the country?
Yes, I do. And it's something that I think has happened in the last 20 years. And I find that surprising, in that we had one fly in the ointment, of course, was Governor Gibbons, who vetoed the SB 283, which was the domestic partnership legislation that was introduced and passed by both houses of the legislature. He vetoed it. They overrode his veto, which was something very unusual. So I think that the forward momentum that the state of Nevada has shown has taken a while to happen, but once it happened very quickly.
I'm wondering, in your mind, do you attribute it to endless lobbying by LGBT groups? Do you attribute it to a different mindset of younger voters? I mean, I wonder if you think this is a social and inevitable cultural evolution.
It is, I think. It's demographic changes. Most people who live in Nevada came from somewhere else, and in many cases they came from other places that were more progressive and more enlightened, and they brought those attitudes and that energy with them.
I'm talking to historian and author Dennis McBride. He's documented the local LGBT movement for decades in Nevada, from the homophobia of the 1900s to strides that the community made in the last 20 years. But what about you? If you're a part of the LGBT community, have you seen a noticeable change in how you're treated by your society, by your neighborhood, and by government? Has the progress here been adequate in your mind, or is there still a lot to do? Give us a call. You're a big part of this conversation today. The number is 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. You can also email son@knpr.org or on Twitter, we are at KNPR News. And now joining us is Tatiana Lewis. She is a lesbian events organizer who volunteers for multiple LGBT nonprofits in Las Vegas. Tatiana, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. I have been told I have the perfect face for radio, so thank you.
I've been told the same. So, Tatiana, you know, through your work with Human Rights Campaign Nevada and Stonewall Nevada, Stonewall Democratic Club of Southern Nevada, you interact a lot in the community, LGBT community. Have you noticed a difference? I wonder if you get a sense that the lives of the community have been improved in the last decade or so, and how so?
Absolutely. I definitely do see a big shift from when I started doing events in 2011 here in Las Vegas and to now. It really has progressed in the right direction, you know, with obviously gay marriage being legal now and everything. Us being able to feel equal, compared to our heterosexual counterparts, is an amazing feeling. I've also seen a lot more of the progressive, the younger generation now embracing more of people who are non-binary, who are they identify as queer. So more, I'm seeing it. I don't know how to put it in a way, but no. I do see it. Yes, progressing, and it, even for the younger generations on the social issues and transgender rights and intersex rights. I'm seeing it just grow and grow and grow in Nevada. I've personally seen it. And like you were saying with Dennis, the having somebody in the government that treats us as equal is very important. And I think Nevada is doing really well in that section, even though we're still kind of considered one of those really last of the Wild West states, you know?
Yeah.
But I do see it, yes. And it's it's amazing to feel equal.
Yeah, you know, today's segment is sparked by this vote this fall to formally delete an amendment from the state constitution banning same-sex marriage. You're married. Your wife is Rhiannon. When did you guys get married?
We were married August 24th of 2018, and we were married here in Las Vegas.
So when you first met, I wonder if you had thought about marriage at that time, or was it before it was legal here in Nevada?
Well, so if I were to backtrack just a slight bit, living in California in 2008, I was 18, and I saw Proposition 8 pass, and I thought I would never be able to get married. I never thought I would see it.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to me now living in Las Vegas, Nevada, when the Supreme Court ruled in favor of gay marriage, I was so happy I cried because I can now get married. Being able to legally marry my wife was the happiest day of my life. In the eyes of the law, my marriage, my love, and my commitment to her was no longer seen as less than a heterosexual couple's marriage, and we are equal. And it's an incredible feeling. And meeting her through HRC Nevada, which was an organization that helps bring awareness about the LGBT community, and it's great. Sorry, I'm a bit nervous, but I'm very thrilled. I'm very thrilled that to be married and accepted here.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to get married, and I never thought I could. I said, God, my brother can get married, which he is. You know, my sister can get married, but I can't. That's not fair.
Yeah, obviously a huge, huge moment for you emotionally. And I believe this means you don't have to worry about things like inheritance protections, hospital rights, medical decisions, those are included now that you're married. But I wonder if you still do you have any, you know, lingering mistrust of the system? Do you think, you know, it's really going to work for you?
I do have a bit of a sense of distrust. I do feel like if, for example, with question two, I feel like if it's not changed to on the federal level, people will just do lawsuits, cost us taxpayers dollars, and make it so harder for same-sex couples to get married. I do worry that, you know, it could, what if gay marriage got overturned federally? I hope it never happens. I don't think it will, but who knows?
Right.
So I think it's very important to change the Nevada, to change it in the Nevada state constitution for same-sex marriage. And I think that's very important. And yeah, I do have a bit of an unease at times. I do, which is, I don't know how else to describe it. Cause you kind of go, no, because sometimes people will they'll promise you all these things. We're going to make it equal. And then the next person comes and they take it away politically. Mm-hmm. So yes, there is a bit of sense of distrust still.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to get into a personal issue for you here a little bit. No matter what the state law says, people have their own views on gay marriage, regardless of what those views are. And you've talked about your grandfather in an article in Pride magazine, and he is Jerry Lewis, who was the famous comedian. He died in 2017. As a kid, you said you went to his muscular dystrophy telethons for years. I knew Jerry Lewis pretty well. I'd written about him and met him several times. He was pretty conservative. And in 2008, he was taken to task for anti-gay remarks. I wonder if he ever talked to you about same-sex marriage, or did the legalization of it in Nevada ever come up between you and him?
You know, we never really did talk about it. My grandfather knew I was gay, but he loved me. He says, I love you no matter what. And he had the exact same rules that my brother and sister had. If you bring over a boyfriend or girlfriend, I have to prove with them first. You know, so I was never treated less than. And, you know, my grandpa Jerry, he loved me. And he knew I was gay. And I'm very sad he never got to meet my wife. He, you know, passed away before he could meet her. And I miss him every day. But he was a wonderful grandfather. And he loved me unconditionally.
Just one more thing on that. We're not talking about that specifically, but did it bother you when he would make comments?
You know, in 2008, I don't really remember it. It didn't really bother me. I don't know. I guess now I look back and go, ooh, why did you say that? But for me, I don't know. My grandpa Jerry was just, to me, he idolized, he was just pure love. So, he did apologize for that, and he did realize the error of his ways, and so sorry.
No, that's great.
There. I was not expecting to answer that. All I can say is my grandpa loved me, and it didn't matter that I was gay. He knew I was gay, and he loved me.
Now with us is Andre Wade. He's the state director of Silver State Equality, an LGBT civil rights organization. He's also the chair of the advisory committee for the Nevada Office of Minority Health and Equity. Andre, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, and glad to be here with Tatiana and Jenna.
Yeah, great to have you. So, Andre, I wonder, in terms of LGBT civil rights in the U.S., how does Nevada rank?
It might be surprising to a lot of folks, but overall, Nevada ranks pretty high compared to other states across the nation, as some of the legislation that you and Dennis talked about has already been passed here in Nevada around non-discrimination for unemployment outside of what was happening at the federal level. There's still a lot of states that are grappling with non-discrimination protections and housing protections, but we had already tackled that issue years ago. And so if you look at some of the indexes that from the Movement Advancement Project that compares different states, we do pretty well, which is great for Nevada.
Yeah, it is interesting. Between 2009 and 2019, Nevada passed 34 LGBT-friendly laws. And according to Human Rights Campaign, none of those laws that we currently have infringe upon LGBT protections. But do we fall short in any areas?
I wouldn't say that we're necessarily falling short, but there's a recognition that there are a lot of different facets of our lives that we need to have protections and to make sure that there's equality there. And it could be something as, I think it's exciting, you know, like around data collection. But when it comes to data collection from the state level, you know, technically we're sort of invisible because the information isn't being protected. There's still a lot of work that we need to do in the areas of HIV and modernizing our laws, as an example. And then there's still a lot of work that we can do to better protect our transgender and gender non-conforming, gender diverse communities. And so we just see there's a lot of opportunity to continue the work that folks like Senator Parks have done, Senator Spearman do, work that Dennis is capturing through his work and what Tatiana is doing on the ground. So it just takes a coalition of folks to continue to press forward to make Nevada a great place to live.
You also worked last year during the 2019 legislative session on two LGBT-centered bills. These included a ban on the so-called gay and trans panic defense. That defense kind of goes like this. It's an argument in court where somebody attempts to defend themselves for attacking someone else by saying he or she was provoked by the sexuality of the victim. The governor signed the bill. Now it's law, and you can't use that argument in court. But I wonder to what extent the LGBT community still worries about being assaulted or murdered.
There, unfortunately, is a constant fear. You know, even though there are protections on the books, you can go to businesses like public accommodations, hotels, restaurants, et cetera, and feel quite safe. You just never know who you're going to encounter in an interpersonal level. And so you still have people out there who are willing to inflict violence on you if they see you holding your hands with your partner or kissing your partner. And so we still urge folks to still be careful because the violence is out there. And the violence is particularly real for folks who identify as transgender and Black transgender women. And so there's still a lot of work for those of us who identify as lesbian, gay, and bisexual to protect our trans brothers and sisters from violence by really continue to advocate mm-hmm. for them and advocate for laws to protect them.
Yeah, and in fact, in the United States this year, the number of murders of people in the transgender community has reached 25 already. Last year, it was 27 murders. Andre Wade, I wonder more specifically what you can talk about or what do you think, you know, aside from speaking up on behalf of those in the trans community, is there anything at the state level that can be done that you think might help protect those people?
You know, that's a good question. You know, wherever we're talking about criminal justice laws and policing, it's really important for us to make sure that sexual orientation and gender identity are woven into these laws and policies and practices and not make assumptions that blanket diversity and inclusion messages are going to take care of some of the more discrete needs, like i.e. protecting transgender folks. And so we just have to make sure that whenever we're having these conversations that we actually call out people who identify as transgender or who are gender diverse to make sure that when it comes to like policing, criminal justice, homelessness, that there are protections in place for them.
You know, we're talking about LGBT, basically life in Nevada. Things have changed greatly here over the last 10 or 20 years. Dennis McBride has talked about that. And in November, people are going to get a chance to eliminate from the state constitution a ban on same-sex marriage. It's already the law. Same-sex marriage is legal here, and it's really more of a formality. If you're in a same-sex marriage out there, how has getting married changed your life in Nevada? Our number is 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. Life for the LGBT community in Nevada really is sort of peaking. U.S. News and World Report in June said we are the best place, best state in the country to live for people in the LGBT community. But there are some issues remaining, and you know, this is the year of the Black Lives Matter movement, and a lot of people argue that civil rights battles or pride celebrations prioritize white gays and lesbians and not people of color. And Tatiana Lewis, you're an LGBT events organizer and a community volunteer. I wonder if you see that here. Is that happening in Nevada?
I'm sorry, can you please repeat the question? I just my dog out to go pee. I'm so sorry.
Sure. Is there a sense that, you know, white gays and lesbians are, you know, get more priority than those in more ethnic communities?
Yes. Oh, yes. I see it, and I'm a white lesbian. Yes. I completely agree. It usually goes for the white fit gay male, and for the lesbian, it's the white slim lesbian. There is those barriers when it comes to that. I do see that in events, but there's some great promoters that are focusing on events that cater to the African American community and to the people of color, and those are great events. And people say, "Well, I feel more welcome now because I know my events will not be everybody's cup of tea." Mm-hmm. So it's. And I do drag king events. I do events that really are diverse and fun. But it's yes, I do see a lot mm-hmm. more of a white prominence. Absolutely.
You know, this is the year, as I said, of the Black Lives Matter movement. Does that effort and that of the LGBT community to win true equality do they overlap?
Yes. I mean, they do overlap. We want equality for the LGBT community, and we also want equality for our African American siblings. And that means all of them. That means in the gay community as well, in the trans community. As you know, trans women are being murdered at an alarming rate, and they all happen to be women of color. So yes, we have each other's backs in that sense of Black Lives Matter mm-hmm. and equality. And absolutely, they do overlap.
Yeah, Andre Wade, you've written that those two movements have often been at odds in the past. What do you think's behind the change? Or if you see the same thing, that the two groups are more coalescing and working together now, if their change is happening, what do you think is behind it?
I think what's behind it is white people being a part of this movement more so than they ever have in the past. When we had a lot of the riots happening after Martin Luther King was murdered, it was primarily black people out in the streets. Now, it's predominantly white people out in the streets. And I think that, you know, we always wonder how impactful was it to have a black president? And, you know, there's a lot of thought pieces about it, and people experienced it and kind of wonder, like, how did we advance because of that? But if you think about the young people or just everyone that's out there protesting, growing up under knowing that their president is black and then seeing a black man on television time and time again being murdered and by police, then it's kind of like a disconnect. You see, like, wait a second, that could easily be my president who's being murdered by police on video time and time again. And so there's like this psychic change. And with a lot of white people getting on board and being a part of this movement, brings hope that there could be change. It's not going to be tomorrow. It's not going to be in 2021. This is going to be something we have to look 5-10 years, unfortunately, down the line to see if there's going to be some change. But with white people getting on board and non-black people, that helps the movement as allies. And black people need allies. Trans people need allies. The LGBTQ community in general needs allies. And so that is the tipping point, I do believe.
And Andre, is the trans community here getting enough support? Part of the reason I say that is typically before a program like this, I'll put out missives about what we're going to be talking about, and I get swamped with emails and things like that. Very little about this this time. And I know there is a substantial LGBT community in Las Vegas. I wonder if there's still fear of talking about these issues here and supporting the trans community.
I think it's a little better, but we could do 1,000% better. So you have organizations like Gender Justice Nevada, Transgender Allies Group doing work in the community at the policy level. You have the center who has programming, robust programming for transgender folks. You have people who are a part of the political process in like Douglas County and Washoe County. But this needs to translate into a lot more of folks like myself and my colleagues and friends to educate each other on what it means to be transgender, listen to more transgender voices, and make sure that we have more spaces that are safe for people who are transgender so that they can live their lives fully and not be in fear of this violence and harassment that we've been talking about. So there's a lot more that we need to do.
Yeah, you know, Andre, you and Silver State Equality have recently made the case that Nevada should require the collection of data on sexual orientation and gender identity of COVID-19 patients. I wonder if you could talk about how you think that could help the LGBT community.
So as I mentioned earlier, when it comes to data, we're largely invisible. And this is across the nation. And so if you have data to know the number of, and it's just demographic data, if you're collecting race and gender, you can go ahead and collect sexual orientation. And you find out, like, the number of people, like, the prevalence, and then you start finding out how different diseases are being impacted, how many number of children are in child welfare that need to be cared for. So we can start using data to address situations and to implement interventions to be able to scale up. But then also, you're able to look at communities from an intersectional standpoint. And so I've been talking to Dr. Melva Thompson, as an example, about intersectionality and the use of data. And so if we know that there's Black people that are suffering from high rates of heart disease, I'm just going to go there. But then what about those who are transgender or identify as bisexual? What do their rates look like? And so if we disaggregate the data, then we can have a really great sense of what folks' overall health outcomes are so we can address them. And so data is just really important to know this information so we can start solving these issues and not using just anecdotes, so we have hard data to do so.
Well, I am going to ask anecdotally, though. I wonder if you're seeing or hearing something that makes you think people in the LGBT community are more vulnerable to COVID-19.
Yeah, there are a lot of reports being released from institutions, op-eds and articles written. And so what I usually say is that when it comes to good measurements, LGBTQ people are on the bottom. And if it's bad measurements, then we're on the top. And so we have high rates of heart disease, smoking, comorbidities. And so if you compound that with something like COVID-19, it just makes things worse. But we need to be able to move to know exactly what those rates are and not just use national data to extrapolate. We need to know exactly what's happening in Nevada so we can use Nevada resources to support those in need.
Before we go, and we only have about 20 seconds left, Andre, I'm going to ask you this. What would another 4 years of President Trump mean to LGBT rights, or would it mean anything?
A disaster.
That's succinct. Andre Wade is the state director of Silver State Equality. Tatiana Lewis is an organizer and an advocate in the LGBT community. And Dennis McBride is a historian. He has written a book about the gay and queer community in Las Vegas going back to the 1860s. I want to thank all three of those, and I want to thank those who wrote or called in. This is State of Nevada.